It's time to head into the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn. In the barn. Talking horse racing news, events, and a whole lot more. Here's your host, Jason Bean.
All right, welcome into the barn, the Bet America Radio Network. And I hope everyone is having a glorious Monday morning. We are the barn is officially on the road. We're taking this mess out of, you know, normally the barn is always stationed in beautiful Seattle, Washington, where I call home. But the National Handicapping Championships are coming up this weekend. And, you know, we decided that the Bet America Radio Network needs to be there live to bring you, the listener, all of the excitement of the National Handicapping Championships. So we're en route to Vegas. And because your humble correspondent here doesn't like to fly, we're driving, so road tripping. I'm actually going to be keeping a little road trip blog on betamerica.com/extra on the blog page. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at Beamie Awards, BEEMIEAWARDS. And you can follow all the excitement here. I'm actually in Portland, Oregon, which is a whole, I think, whole 2.5 hours from where I started out this morning. But I was purposely stopping here to catch up some old friends. If you didn't know, I mentioned in the first episode, but I worked here at Portland Meadows for 9 glorious years, and so I went and stopped by the track and visited with some friends and caught up with them, and then went over and saw some other friends that were non-racing folks. I had a great dinner at one of my favorite places, Russell Street Barbecue. If you ever want good hipster barbecue, Russell Street is your place to go. But we'll talk all about our barn being on the road here in a little bit. We're going to be joined a little later on by Craig Milkowski. He's the chief figure maker at Timeform US, and essentially he makes speed figures for a living. And so I'm always – speed figures, they're such an important piece of handicapping. So many people use them, and they're always discussed. And I think Craig's a great guy to talk about, A, how they're made, B, how to tell the difference between them, and, you know, see, you know, just a lot of general questions about how speed figures are actually made. And, you know, I'm just excited to talk to him. Craig's a cool guy. I follow him on Twitter. He's very strong opinionated about speed figures in general and about the game of horse racing. So really looking forward to chat with him. And we'll do that here a little bit later. Also had something really strange happen this weekend that I want to talk with you guys about, and we'll do that here in a few minutes. But like I said, taking the barn on the road, stopped by Portland Meadows. So the Portland Mile is tomorrow on Tuesday. And so We're gonna talk about that tomorrow's show a little bit. It's only a $25,000 race, so you know, Jason, why are you talking about a $25,000 race? Because dang it, it's the most important race in the state of Oregon, and I love the race, and so we're gonna talk about it a little bit on tomorrow's show. The Portland Mile has so many great memories for me. There's actually been some really good horses that have won the Portland Mile, and you know, it's a Tuesday, so there's not a whole lot of betting action going on. So why not? We'll take a look at the nice card at Portland Meadows. We'll do that again more tomorrow's show. But my plan for the next few days is I'm going to drive in the morning, usually get to where I'm going to be in the early afternoon, and then set up shop and do an episode of the barn, and then we'll go back on, and we'll get to Vegas by Wednesday morning. I should be there. I think I'm gonna go to Redding tomorrow, which is about 450 miles from Portland, so probably 7 or 8 hours driving, and then Bakersfield the next day after that. Again, it's another, you know, 400 miles or so, and then Vegas, it's like another 3 hours from Bakersfield. So we'll get there Wednesday. The Bet America team will be joining me, and we'll try to get you all the news and notes on the National Handicapping Championship as we lead up to that big event, which is Friday and Saturday. I'm really excited. I haven't been to Las Vegas since 2003. So when I finished college, which was 02, summer of 02, my dad had just died, and so I decided, you know what, I'm just going to take some time off. And you know, I was going to go to law school, and I ended up going to law school after my year off at beautiful Gonzaga University in Spokane. But I just wanted to take a year off. My weight had gotten a little out of control, so I needed to lose some weight. I just needed to get myself healthy. So to get healthy, about a week after graduation, I went to Vegas. I'd never been, and I don't like to fly, so I drove down, and I ended up winning one of the weeknight poker tournaments at the Mirage for $10,000. So I'd already saved up a little money anyways, and I got a little bit of money from my dad after he passed. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to work this year. I'm just going to play cards all year. And so I put the $10,000 in the bank and just and left it down there in Vegas. But I went to Vegas 10 times that year off, and never flying. So I've made this drive many times. And if you've ever read my book Southbound, you know I kind of go over the beauty of this drive as the character in the book makes it. But I played off. I had to go back and take that 10 grand out again in about 8 or 9 months into my year of playing cards for a living. But I ended up for the year, which I thought was a cool achievement. And then I went to law school and eventually found my way into horse racing. I'm sure we'll tell a lot of those stories as we go on in the days and weeks and months here on the barn. But I just loved going to Vegas and playing cards. Like, it was just my favorite thing ever. My friend Ryan Waddell, who lives down there, we'd go play golf in the morning, and then we'd play cards all afternoon and into the night. And it was just a ton of fun. But I think my last time I went was in the spring of 2003, and then between, you know, work and moving around and announcing and all that kind of stuff, just haven't been back to Vegas. So first time in over a decade. My friend Ryan Waddell still lives down there, so I'm actually going to meet up with him one day. And just excited to see how much the city's changed, and really excited to see the NHC up close. You know, it's something that handicappers and gamblers talk about all the time online. It's kind of a big deal. And so I'm really excited to see it in person. There's definitely a lot of folks I want to chat with and meet. I'm looking forward to seeing if you're coming down for the NHC, I'm sure you'll be able to find us. Pete and Merv and me, we'll have all the guys from Bet America, we'll have a table somewhere, and I'll probably be doing live interviews right there and uploading them for the podcast throughout the day. So if you're going to be down there, come by and say hi. If you got somebody you want to hear from, email me barn@betamerica.com and let me know who you want to hear from. But should be a fun week. I'm excited. I like road trips, and so I'm excited to take this road trip, and we'll bring you along here on the barn with us as we do that. Again, going to be joined here in a few minutes by Craig Milkowski from Timeform US. There's not a whole lot to recap in racing this week. It was kind of a really, really slow week. I think the Santa Monica might have been the only graded stakes race run in the country, and that was won by a 64-1 shot named Lost Bus, who by the end of the day, I think a lot of people were agreeing that the track Saturday at Santa Anita was a little bit speed favoring, and he was a horse that just got on the lead, and there was a horse named Finest City that was right alongside him most of the trip, and they ding-donged all the way down the lane, and Lost Bus prevailed at 65-1. And ended up causing a situation where going into the last race of the day, there was three horses live. There was a big double carryover going into that card. So there was three horses that were live for $1.1 million. And one of those horses took command at the top of the stretch and pulled off to win with ease. So whoever had that one winning ticket, along with getting a life-changing score, didn't have to sweat it too much, because the last quarter mile, it was just a matter, as long as the rider didn't fall off, that person was going to take home $1.1 million. We haven't heard yet who it is. I'm sure that news will come out at some point. But I'm always curious after the fact to see what kind of ticket won. Was it a big, conglomerate ticket with five guys each putting in $2,000 or something? Or was it, just some ham and egger who, put together a $32 ticket at his local OTB or at BetAmerica.com and hit? So very excited to see who got that $1.1 million. I figure after taxes, it's only like $800,000. So, I mean, it's not a ton of dough. But, big hits at Santa Anita. The big race at Gulfstream Park, I got in an argument with some people about this. Charming Kitten won the 2-mile H. Allen Jerkin Stakes, and I hate these marathon races that are like that. The only time I like them is when one of the jockeys screws up and accidentally thinks it's a one-lap race and starts gunning for home. When they turn for home, opens up 30 lengths and then celebrates like he just, was on Secretariat when everybody else was. But it's just everybody grabs a hold for a mile and three quarters, and then there's a quarter mile dash. It's essentially just like a mile turf race, except for there's a whole extra lap. And I don't know. I mean, it was just so boring. And Larry Comas, the great Larry Comas, did his best to make it interesting. I just don't know if it's possible. And I was talking to some people, and they're like, oh, I love it, the stamina and the strategy. I go, strategy? Everybody grabbed a hold for, you know, for, what is it, for 14 furlongs, and then, you know, and then they shoved for the last two. So, I don't know. They just, the long marathons don't do anything for me. If you disagree with me, email me, barn@betamerica.com, or find me on Twitter and tell me I'm an idiot. But just not my style, man. But, yeah, it was really cool seeing that pick six go down. I know a lot of folks, obviously, for obvious reasons, were rooting for it to carry over again, because then you'd have $1 million carryover into the Sunday card. But, alas, that was not meant to happen. But we're going to head out to our first break, and we come back. I had a really weird thing happen this weekend, and I wanted to tell you guys about it. And then after that, we're going to be joined by Craig Milkowski. It's the Bet America Radio Network. You are in the barn.
Hello, this is Kayla Strah, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the Bet America way.
All right, welcome back here to the barn, the Bet America Radio Network. And I had something really, really strange happen this weekend. I was out washing my truck, you know, cleaning it up nice and good. And all of a sudden down the street, I hear this tire screeching and this car just comes flying down towards us. And I hadn't seen a car like this in a long time. It was kind of the silver sport car looking thing. So the guy comes running up to my, you know, driving up to my door, and he just slams on the brake, stops right in front of my car, and he gets out, and he's this crazy, wild-eyed, dark or white-haired scientist. And he tells me, he says, Jason, I have to take you somewhere. And so I said, I don't even know you. Who are you? What are you doing? He goes, I have to show you something. Get in the car. And I said, well, where are we going? And he said, I'm going to show you
horse racing in the year 2025.
So I got in the car with him, and this is what I saw in horse racing in the year 2025.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
After a brief health scare, Ahmed Zayat starts a new fitness company called Power Up Ahmed.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
Frank Stronach bought Hawthorne Racecourse and created the $5 million Illinois Derby with its very own point system. As part of the plan, no Churchill tracks were awarded points.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
In an attempt to curb cheating, Trackus installs computer chips in every veterinarian's skin at the track so you know where they're at and what they're doing. Meanwhile, Steve Asmussen remains winning at 30%.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
Because of a law passed by President Donald Trump in 2021, BetAmerica.com has been forced to change their name to BetAmericaIsGreatAgain.com.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
Post times are now controlled by a central post time office in Lexington, Kentucky, except for Oaklawn Park. They just keep running on top of everyone else.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
Dwayne Lucas wins the Kentucky Derby again and wheels the winner back to run in the Peter Pan Stakes as a tune-up for the Preakness.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
Bob Baffert wins the Breeders' Cup Classic and yet still carries in his 17-year-old son Bodie in his arms for the win picture. Bodie yells Baba Booey while Dad is being interviewed.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
Mattress Matt gets another stakes winner. Just kidding. His horses all suck now.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
And that's what happened when I looked into the future of horse racing
in 2025.
Horse racing in the year 2025.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
All right, back here on the Bet America Radio Network. You are in the barn on our Monday morning show. We're pleased to go out to beautiful Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and welcome in the chief figure maker for Timeform US, Craig Milkowski. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jason. How are you tonight?
Doing good, man. I'm on the road, so this is my first time. I have my own little home studio set up for the show here, but right now I'm doing it from the comfort of the guest inn suites here in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, nice. I've done that a few times with TVG. I've done it from the Will Rogers Airport. I've done it from so many different places I can't keep track.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. The technology allows us to pretty much do our work wherever you're at. Like tomorrow, I'll probably do it from Reading, and then the following day from Vegas.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, Craig, we were talking right before we came on air, and it was kind of a quiet weekend of racing, like literally one of the more quiet weekends I remember in a long time.
Yeah, it's kind of like that one the week before Christmas where nothing really happens. Yeah. And as I mentioned to you, it's the first time in a while I really didn't watch any racing. I'll get caught up on Monday with so few tracks running in the winter. It doesn't take a whole lot of time and all the cancellations with the storm. But I just kind of hung out and gave myself a little vacation.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's a good thing. And actually, it's funny you mentioned the week before Christmas. I had one of my biggest weekends ever. Right the weekend before Christmas, like I hit a big pick four at Hollywood and then a big trifecta at Hawthorne, like within the same weekend. And then I made the mistake of taking that and going to Santa Anita for a week, and most of it was gone by the end of that trip. But sometimes those quiet weekends are great, but like you said, sometimes you need to take some time off. And Craig, we're going to talk a lot about speed figures and stuff here in a little bit, but I'm always curious, how did you get involved in horse racing?
Well, it's kind of an interesting start. I actually went to high school with Larry Colmes, who I would imagine anyone who's possibly going to listen to this broadcast knows who he is. Mm-hmm. And, we were friends. We had a lot of classes together, and he used to bug me about going to the racetrack, and I would always just laugh it off and say, nah, I'm not going to do that. And, eventually he talked me into it, and I went one time, and I was pretty hooked after that. I thought it was exciting. I liked the betting aspect. I liked the sport aspect, and just the challenge of picking winners.
What track did Larry take you to?
For the very first time, I think it was Booby Racetrack, which no longer exists. I remember going up to Dick Woolley's announcer's booth and hanging out for a little while and just thought it was the neatest thing.
So Larry's like the he's the big announcer in the country right now, but was Larry like a cool kid in high school, or was he like in the corner doing like practice race calls with toy horses and stuff?
I don't want to denigrate Larry much. He's my friend, but I would definitely say probably toward the latter is a little more accurate.
You know what, though? I'm convinced that to be great, like at least in the announcer world, like I know Geller used to do that. I know Travis used to do that. So maybe there's something to that. But I think Larry's one of the nicest guys I've met in racing, and he's always willing to help out all the young announcers that come around. What was it kind of like to see him? Because, I mean, you probably knew him when he was in the infancy of his announcing career, right?
Oh, definitely. And I remember one of the first trips I made is, we haven't brought it up, but I'm a retired Air Force guy. And when I was young, back when I was still a single guy, me and another friend of mine, also from the same high school, we actually went to Birmingham, Alabama, and hung out with Larry for a couple weeks when he had his real first full-time gig.
Who's our guest on the show in the background there?
Yeah, it was my dog decided he wanted to go out right in the middle of the show.
Does your dog have a horse racing name or no?
No, I don't have one for that.
Craig Milkowski joining us. He's the chief figure maker for Timeform US. So you mentioned being in the Air Force. Do you follow racing when you're in the military? Because obviously, when you were in the military, it wasn't like you'd hop on Twitter back then.
No, it wasn't. But luckily, my first assignment was at McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey, so there was plenty of tracks nearby. Spent a whole lot of time at Garden State and even Freehold as we go to the harness track. And New Jersey was one of the more liberal places when it came to simulcasting back in the early days. So that was like heaven for me. It was almost like going to Vegas. You go to Garden State and there'd be 20 tracks on the menu, which today is nothing, but 1985 was something.
I've always heard everybody I know that talks about Garden State talks about it very reverentially. Like they all just say it was beautiful, just a cool racetrack. Was that the case?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was nice. It was much nicer than your typical racetrack back in the day. Nothing against Pimlico, which was my hometown track, but it was just so much cleaner, nicer. Not as many people, but the quality of racing was good, and it was nighttime racing, which worked out well for me.
Did you go to the Preakness at all as a young kid in Baltimore?
You know, I actually didn't. I really didn't get into racing until I met Larry. I was probably 16 years old, and I did go a few times after. I was actually there the year they lost power when Real Quiet won, so I haven't been back since, I don't think. I've been. It's a good atmosphere, but I'm just one. I can go watch a bunch of claimers every day, and that's just as good for me as going to the Preakness.
Well, I know Larry was always real fond of Charlestown. Did you go make that drive? Because it's only like an hour from Baltimore and D.C., right?
Right. Oh, yeah. We spent as much time at Charlestown as we – but with it being a night track and being in school, we probably were there as much as we were ever at Pimlico or Laurel. Hung out with Costi Karras all the time, who's, we've joked about it a few times privately. He's a legend for us. Costi was the man.
You know, it's funny, like my Emerald Downs raced at night too. And so like me and my friends in high school, it was the same kind of thing. And, we had one friend that had a fake ID and one friend that had kind of a beard. And so they would never question him when he went up to bed. Because I remember my dad telling me when I was a little kid, my dad would always make, $2 bets for me and stuff. And, I'll never forget, I was about 15 or so, and I hit my growth spurt, and I was getting close to as tall as he was. I mean, I'm 6'4 now, but, I was about 6'1 or so, and I remember he finally looked at me, and he goes, I think you're old enough to start making your own bets. And I go, well, you have to be 18. He goes, they're not going to question you. And then I said, what if they do? I'll go to jail. And he's like, no, you'll be fine. I'll tell them I had a bad leg and I needed you to run my bet up for me. I said, oh yeah, I'm sure they'll just let me skate off of that. But I'll never forget. I walked up to the teller and I was like, $2 to win on the four, please. And she's like, she kind of looked at me for just a second. Was like, all right, here you go. I don't ever remember
having a problem getting the bet in my entire life.
I shouldn't say that was at Emerald Downs. I don't want to get them in trouble. It was at a certain racetrack in the Seattle metropolitan area.
Gotcha. It may have been Long Acres.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even though I was 12 when that knocked over. Craig Milkowski joining us. So you're in the Air Force. You know, and Larry, you stay in with racing and stuff. But how do you start making speed figures? Like, how does that come into your life?
Well, I started out like most people. I thought, hey, this is the greatest thing ever. I had the misfortune of, I think, cashing the first ticket I ever bet. And, thought it was an easy game, and I quickly found out it wasn't and, started losing money, which was okay as a single guy with no real commitments or anything. But, I wasn't all that happy about it, so I started reading books and trying to learn all I could. And one of the books I came across was Andy Byers' Picking Winners, which taught all about speed figures. And then, believe it or not, at the McGuire Air Force Base Library, now whether it's still there, I don't know, but there were about five or six handicapping books from William Quirin and Tom Ainsley, Andy Byers. So I just read everything I could, and that kind of got me started on that path.
And so you actually did speed figures on your own before joining up with Timeform, is that right?
Right. It's kind of a funny story. I started doing them for myself, and I've been doing them all along. But, as we got more and more used to computers, I started automating them and kind of taught myself how to program and how to do web pages. And I actually came up with a program that would automate a lot of the process to actually produce the output. And I did that while I was stationed in Saudi Arabia working in the middle of the night. And, I just kind of did it as a hobby, and people started taking notice and asking me about it and wanting to know if they could get them and, offering me money. So I was like, hey, why not? And I started selling the program to some customers and got a website, which I called pacefigures.com because, in addition to speed figures, I had pace figures. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I got started, and that's how the Timeform US guys found me.
So do you think when guys start asking you, is it because they're winning a lot or because maybe they just want a different angle? Because, you know, I assume that for a long time everybody was using buyer speed figures almost exclusively. Is that right?
Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, I guess there were sheets and stuff like that, but, you know, a guy like me couldn't afford them. And you know, it was just one of those things. I started out talking on message boards at, like, paceadvantage.com just as a hobbyist. And, you know, I started posting, hey, this is the horses I like and this is why. And I had a good run of success, and that's what kind of drew people.
Yeah.
War Emblem was the big one. I loved him before the Illinois Derby, which – I think he won at 6-1, and of course we know he won the Derby at 20-1. And you know, when he hits, you know, hit some big prices, people tend to take notice.
Absolutely. Craig Mokowski joining us. He's the chief figure maker at Timeform US. So with speed figure, is it all math and science, or is there some kind of personal artistic license you can take with speed figures?
No, you know, personally, I think you have to take some artistic license because racing's just not that easy. I mean, if you could do it with just math and science, there'd be a million guys doing it, and every horse that won would pay $3. I mean, I'm exaggerating, of course. You know, that's just the way it seems to me. And racetracks change. There's crazy things. The timers aren't as accurate as people like to think they are. I mean, they're still operated by humans, and they make mistakes. And if you just accept everything at face value, you're going to have some pretty crazy-looking speed figures. So, you know, I do a lot of the grunt work with a computer, but I still, every race card that I do, I make the variants by hand. And there's a lot of stuff that you have to use artistic license.
And is that the same with other figures as well, like Byers and Brisnet and all that kind of stuff, do you think?
I'm sure it is with Byer. I'm not going to criticize Andy Byer. I learned a ton from him, and he's my hero. And I just laugh when I see the flack he gets over some of the figures he makes. And hey, I'll question some of them too. But you know, it's no easy job. I mean, I'm sure every figure I make isn't perfect, and I'm sure I've blown some just like everybody else has because of the reasons you mentioned. It's just not all math and science, you know. It can be tough some days.
Do you check your figures up against the competitors on a regular? I mean, I assume for big races you probably always do, but like you don't go check the fifth at Portland to see what Byer did for that versus you, right?
No, and to be honest, I don't even check the big ones anymore because we're just two different methods.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'll see them as people post them, of course, and if they ask me, I mean, I'm pretty knowledgeable about all the speed figures, so I can at least have a reasonable discussion. But as far as checking, I really don't anymore. I did when we first started, but, you know, I just let my work stand on its own and do the best job that I can.
Do you ever find yourself having to fight? You know, we talked about the artistic license and the personal feelings, like, do you ever find yourself like, oh, some horse that cost you a pick four? Like, I don't want to give him a good number. He's a terrible horse. Like, do you ever run into that where you have to kind of check yourself a little bit?
No, you know, that's the one good thing about doing so many figures for so many tracks is I can kind of keep the two things separate. I'm very objective when it comes to the figures. I don't even put names. It's strictly numbers when I look at my worksheets. So unless I really remember that this race was such and such, you know, the eighth race at Santa Anita, I'm not going to know what I'm looking at. I mean, of course, I know the grade ones and things like that, but for the most part, no, I don't have any problems with those things.
Are figures different for routes and sprints? I seem to remember that being the case, like with Byers, like a length was 2 points in a sprint and 1.5 in a route, or something to that effect. Is it like that with your figures as well, or does the distance not matter as much? I guess in the scaling of it.
No, the difference, the distance matters, and I, you know, it is a scale, and I always go back to the same thing from, you know, Andy Byer's book. If you run the 100 meters and you lose by a second to Usain Bolt, you know, that's a big difference than if you run the mile and lose by a second in the Olympics. You know, you're really close if you lose by a second in the mile. Uh-huh. If you lose at the 100 meters, you're probably the millionth fastest person in the world. So
obviously you use comparisons and variants and all. It's like a race like Gulfstream had this past weekend where there's a 2-mile turf race or whatever it was, the Alan Jerkins race. Like, how do you go upon making a figure for that when there's not really comparable times for that kind of race?
Right, and I'll be the first to tell you one thing we don't do is anything over a mile and a half, we don't do any pace figures because, like you said, there's nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
What we do is just give a rating to each horse for the final, for where they finished, and it's more of a class rating than a time rating. And it's just kind of based on their history. I mean, it wouldn't matter what time they ran. We're just looking at where the horses ran in comparison to each other.
One of the things you briefly touched on, and I wanted to follow up with this because I've seen you'd mention it on Twitter, some of your pet peeves as far as not just figure making, but I think for handicappers in general, one of those you mentioned was timing malfunctions or timing in general. Are there still tracks that are hand-timed, or are they all now via the teletimer?
I believe there's a couple. I think Fair Meadows, which is here in Oklahoma, still does some hand timing for the thoroughbred races. There's a couple other small ones, but I don't make speed figures for those. So,
okay.
Yeah, you know, it really doesn't come into play.
Because Portland had, when I first was practicing there, they had a guy that would just sit in the announcer's booth and had to guess. And, like, the pole would be blocked by a tree. And I'm thinking, well, how on earth does... You know, and that's also true with workout times, because like the clocker stand is on the back stretch, and there's a big golf clubhouse before the finish line. So literally, the timer says she just adds a second to whenever they go by the start of the clubhouse. But it seems like there's some pretty inexact sciences going on here for things that folks are betting a lot of money on.
Right. I've seen some people, you know, tout that they make speed figures and they're hand timing all the races. And I just laugh at that because I've tried hand timing. It's hard enough to time off a video replay with your mouse. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like trying to sit there and get the perfect angle and guess just when a horse, you know, nose hits the wire. You can get close and you could just as easily be, you know, a second off and you're not even going to know. So I much prefer, I wish there were no timing errors, but hand timing, you could forget speed figures.
Yeah, I mean, we've had times when I was at Portland Meadows, I remember a few times where the teletimer didn't work or, you know, it got tripped off by a bird. Like, you know, I one time we had a race where, you know, something tripped the wire early. And so it said the opening quarter was in like 18-3. And I remember saying, you know, in the call, I said, you know, the opening quarter, 18-3, the fastest in thoroughbred racing history. And my boss called me and he goes, you know, you probably shouldn't say that. I was like, why not? I said, it's true. And he kind of gave me crap. He wasn't mad, but he kind of gave me crap for essentially pointing out that something, you know, something went wrong. But, right. You know,
that's one thing that I do. I've been doing this so long and I've become so acquainted with all the tracks and the different, you know, what kind of fractions they run that. 9 times out of 10, I can, when I see a fraction, I know if something's wrong. I mean, I'm not always right, but I at least know enough to go investigate and see what happened. There's a track running. I don't want to give bad publicity, but there's one running now where they keep tripping the timer. You see the final time pop up on the screen before the horses even hit the wire.
Yeah.
So there's definitely an issue there, and I'm sure they're working to get it fixed, but... You know, if you don't know those things and you try to make some speed and pace figures, you get some crazy looking numbers.
Well, and also you're subject to, because a lot of the stuff is just entered manually by Equibase, right? So, I mean,
right.
You're subject to somebody might just hit a 4 when it's supposed to be a 3, and it makes things a little bit different.
Yeah, it does. And I catch a lot of those. And I try to work with Equibase when I see them and I point them out. You know, and I let them know, usually privately, not always. Sometimes sure. I get annoyed and I get tired of it. But for the most part, I'll say, hey, you guys might want to check such and such a time. And you can watch the replay and see. It'll just be a couple numbers transposed or, like I said, just hit one of the wrong numbers. But, you know, it wouldn't seem like a big deal. But if you're 2/5 off on a pace figure, it's a huge amount of points, and I can see it right away.
Well, what about, like, Gulfstream's a track that I watch a lot. And, like, those mile races that are straight down the backstretch, it always seems like they'll go 23 or 24 for the opening quarter. And then the second quarter will be, like, 21 or 22. Is that... just because they're running straight the whole time, or is it something to do with run-up, or do you have a theory on that?
Yeah, they have basically no run-up for those races. And,
okay.
I've also heard they use Trackus, which I think they have there's some kind of equipment issue where the end of the shoot, they can't set up their equipment far enough back to get it exactly right. But uh-huh. I think their first quarters you can kind of take with a grain of salt, and after that everything's fine.
Okay.
But, they're pretty consistent with it, so it's not too big of a deal. But I think the total lack of run-up is why the first quarter's slow.
What's the biggest figure you've ever given out?
The one, you know, a lot of it is the older ones are stuff we converted from the old days. So the biggest one since I've been with Timeform US was definitely the Breeders' Cup Classic this year, which was a 136.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, because he was, I mean... Because I've always, I remember reading a lot of the books early on, and you always heard, lone front running, big figure score. And is it just because when horses are by themselves like that, they tend to run their best? Or is it something about, being in front that tends to lead to a higher speed figure? I don't know.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think it's like you say, one thing I have noticed that you bring up is sometimes it doesn't matter how fast a horse goes if he's by himself. They seem to run the best they ever do, as opposed they could be going slower but fighting with another horse, and it's a little more stressful. And the other thing is that it's just they're not losing any ground for the most part. They tuck right in on the rail. They got no traffic, so they're going the shortest A to B. And, so that's generally where the highest speed figures come in, are going to be wire to wire just because of the ground loss thing.
So do you go back in time and, just for fun and, make figures for Secretariat and stuff like that?
I've tried it a couple times, and there's just not enough data in horse racing. I hate to say it. I mean, if it was like baseball where all the info was freely available and you could dig deep, I'm the kind of geek that would go and do things like that. But it was too tough. There's just not enough information, I don't believe.
Has Beyer ever done that? Because I want to say that they did, but I can't remember.
I know he was making speed figures at the time, and I know that he said what he gave. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I don't think he's ever gone back and retroactively done it. And I don't think he was using even the same scale at the time.
Oh, gotcha.
But I'm probably the wrong guy to ask. I could be off on that. I'm not sure.
So if folks have questions about time form or want to get your guys' past performances and speed figures, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way, they can go to our blog. It's the Timeform US. If you just search Timeform US blog, it'll come up right in the top in Google, or they can write to me at Craig@TimeformUS. Or if they're actually using the product, it's just support@TimeformUS.com, of course, on both of those.
All right, cool. Well, Craig, I really appreciate your time, and I always love interacting with you on Twitter. You're not afraid to let it fly a little bit on there.
No, my boss gets on me a little sometimes, so I try to keep it calm. But I'm a horse player at heart, so
I think sometimes
it just comes out whatever I feel like saying. That's what I say.
I keep waiting for my first wrist slap from my new bosses at Bet America, but so far they haven't. They've been super cool, so I got no complaints on that.
Good.
All right, Craig Milkowski from Timeform US joining us. Craig, I really appreciate it. Now we'll be right back after the short timeout. You are in the barn.
This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn with Jason Beam.
All right, my thanks to Craig Milkowski from Timeform US for joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. I hope everybody got some interesting information. I find it fascinating, the whole math and science behind the speed figures, because they're just such a prominent part of the handicapping and the horse racing game. So our thanks to Craig for joining us. Our thanks to you, the listeners, for listening in. If you would like to contact the show, email me, barn@betamerica.com. Again, as I said earlier in the broadcast, we're on the road. The barn is en route to Las Vegas, Nevada, and you can follow along my little road trip journey at betamerica.com/extra on the blog page. I'll be doing some nightly blogs recapping the travels of the day. And already got two horse tracks in the rearview mirror. Emerald Downs, I passed about 10 minutes after I left home, and Portland Meadows, I passed this later this morning, and we'll leave in the dust. So off to Redding, California is the goal destination for tomorrow. So tomorrow's show will be broadcast live from right near Lake Shasta, beautiful Lake Shasta in Northern California. Redding, like a lot of people always tell me, it's like kind of a dump. I think Redding's awesome. Like, I love going on the Sundial Bridge. I think it's beautiful to take a walk over the river. So I'm excited to go to Redding. And a lot of people hate on Bakersfield. I like Bakersfield as well. How about that? All right, well, we'll catch you tomorrow. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening to the Bet America Radio Network. Don't forget to visit betamerica.com. If you haven't signed up yet, we have that great initial deposit matching up to $300, and a lot of cool stuff going on at betamerica.com, so be sure to check us out. And we'll see you tomorrow here in the barn.